Welcome to lecture three, everybody. This is where we try to teach you C in a very abbreviated version. You know, there's learn C in 24 hours. This is learn C in 3 hours, but with a lot of work on your end, trying to do the reading and trying to start the homework, which is going to be out very soon. In terms of the news of the day, I have the MIPS supercomputer. Most supercomputers are built using a large cluster of mostly x86 class machines, and MIPS is an architecture, an instruction set architecture. We saw that before, the big pink, right, abstraction line. And that was very popular in the 80s and kind of waned in popularity. The PS2 was MIPS and some printers, but not a lot of other machines. But they're kind of reinstituting it, and they're actually going to be building this supercomputer cluster out of this thing called the Leung-San processor. So MIPS is still alive, keeping hope alive, and it's pretty cool that China's going to be building a supercomputer out of MIPS, because you're learning MIPS, yay! So you can, in theory, go there and hack the supercomputer. Pretty cool. All right. In review, we've talked about number lines, number encodings, two meta things. One, ain't no free lunch. If you want to get more negative numbers, you have to give up something, right? If you want to extend the speed, yeah, that's fine. Expand this, the size of all the positive numbers, you got to give up something to get that. You only have 2 to the n things to work with. You have n bits. That's the big thing here. We saw five integer decodings, integer encodings, and you're also going to see. Maybe I'm a little hot here on the wireless mic. You're going to see that we basically use these two, which are unsigned and two's complement, also known as signed. So pretty easy. Unsigned is signed is what we use. Now, you say signed, there are four signed ones, but there's only one we ever use, and that's two's complement, so we kind of call it unsigned and signed. And the other piece of it is that we have an infinite number of things we might want to try to represent, like numbers, a number line, infinite number line, another infinite space of things, but a finite amount of space we have, right? That's reality. So the infinite number of video games you want to own, but a finite number of area on your shelf or something. So we have errors. The computers will find out we have errors as things overflow. We'll try to deal with those in the most graceful way possible. We'll talk about them more when we get to floating point numbers. But now, just for now, understand that when we overflow, we wrap around, right? On both the unsigned and signed side, if I get too big, I just wrap around the negative side. That's all I do. And when I mean wrap around, I wrap around in the binary odometer encoding way, right? So if I get to all ones, I wrap around to all zeros, whatever those happen to be interpreted as. In the unsigned, it goes from a biggest number back to zero. In the signed, it goes from a really big positive number to a really big negative number, right? Okay, which means the wrapping happens here, the wrapping happens there. This isn't a wrapping. All ones to all zeros is not actually overflow, it's perfect. All ones is minus one, and all zeros is zero. That's not at all a problem. Here is where the wrapping happens with that particular encoding, okay? All right. So, welcome to C. This is the introduction to C portion. We always start here with this slide. This is the reference manual, Carnegie and Ritchie, otherwise affectionately known as KNR. You want the second version with this little NCC stamp on there. I looked back at the requirements, and officially, by the book, it is you have to have had not 61B. 61B is, in fact, no longer a requirement. But the official requirement on the book is some C/C++/Java programming. And that might be fulfilled by a one-unit pass, not pass course. But when I took that survey, which is right here, I've never coded in C, and I don't know Java or C++. And there are 10% of you. This wasn't when you all had your clickers yet, but at some point you'd imagine the proportions probably stay about the same. So 10% of you, or out of 330 students, actually do not satisfy that requirement. And what I'm trying to do is I want to see, can we keep the level of standard of what we expect 61 students to know with regard to C programming at graduation from 61C, but also allow 30 more students to come in the pipe who really are excited about taking 61C this semester, but fall into that category. Okay? So what we decided to do was, what TA support can we provide for these students? Now, know that this is an experiment. And as an experiment, it may fail. And so what that means is, you may be a student who falls in that category and struggles to learn the C that we expect of you, that we've always expected. I'm not changing expectations of what C is. I'm going to try to support you with TA resources. That's how that's going to work, right? So my question is, what happens if you try this experiment and fail? Well, The worst case is you're a semester delayed because you just don't take this course. You know, you try, and after project one, you go, I can't do it. That's too hard to learn all of C, right? Given no Java in only a couple of weeks, right? And it's really hard to do that, okay? So maybe you go, well, that means it might be too late for you to go back and take 621B this semester, and it's too late to take 621C. So now all of a sudden, you kind of missed a semester, and I feel bad about that. But I want to make sure you all know that this is an experiment. We're going to try as hard as we can to accommodate that 10%, but know that it may not work out, and you may want to, like, be risk-averse and also somehow take 621B, maybe, or also somehow take the 9C course, so that if you actually do care about taking 621C, but you don't want to take 621B, you can at least take the 9C course, this one-unit course, which will guarantee that you can take 621C in the summer or next semester because you'll have at least the prerequisites now. Does that make sense? So we're going to support you as much as possible is the long story short, but it may not work, and I want to make sure you all know about that if you're in that 10% to be able to plan accordingly. Does that kind of help a little bit? All right, get some nodding. So what should you do if you're in that 10%? What you need to do right now, if you kind of, you don't need to tell me because I essentially know about 30 of you. For you 30, you need to treat this as if this were a course, which is an 8-unit course, which means I think you need to spend almost double the time to kind of get all, you're basically trying to squeeze all of 621B into 2 weeks in terms of learning Java to learn C part. So I believe you're going to need to really, really, really spend extra time, and TA is giving me some nodding, getting this. Maybe you might be a language person who just gets languages, then don't worry about it. But if you think that you're starting to learn some C and you're reading KNR, that was the reading assignment for this week, and you're starting to read and you're like, boy, this is hard, I don't get it, it's different from Scheme, it's different than anything I've seen before, then I think time is what you need, as well as a emergency tutorial for these students, Wednesday 7 to 8, and as soon as we get a room, we're going to put that on the website. So that's kind of where we're starting. We're starting with giving you an emergency tutorial, 7 to 8, and that might run long, but we got it ready. Bam, there's your tutorial. As well as giving you as much TA support as you need. If you start and you have questions, that's where you go. Ask your TAs, ask me in office hours. We love C. We love teaching this stuff. Just come ask questions. But it has to be on you to get yourself rolling. Does that kind of help a little bit? Just to make sure I support these 30 students as much as I can. That's what I'm doing. All right. But at the end, like if all of a sudden a month into this you say, you know, it's not working for me, understand that this was an experiment and maybe we should go back to requiring this and not allowing these students even in the room. If you think that, tell me that, right? But I'm going to try to support these guys as much as possible. All right. So started with C, started with B. Turns out I actually looked in the back. There is no A. There was a B language. There was a C language. There was a C++ language. There are modifications. C had two incarnations, the first version and the second version. We're now in the second version. However, there's been an update, and the update is really critical because they learned a lot from Java and learned about a lot about kind of what was broken with C without going all the way to C++, but what was broken with C, and they introduced the C99 standard, or 9X. And there's also a new standard in progress, and maybe in a couple semesters we'll introduce that one. But right now, 9X is the current standard, and you need to add this on your compile line to get to that. And once you do that, all of a sudden it feels really much like really like Java. I wouldn't say it's like Java in all the other ways, but you can have comments like Java. I'll talk about all the things you can have right here. You can have declarations in your for loops. So in your for loop, you can have for int I equals 0, and I was never known about before that for loop. In normal C, you can't do that. You have to declare things above and then use your for loop. But in Java, you can on the fly say, you know, guess what? I want an I here, for int I equals 0. That's pretty cool. And you can do that thanks to C99, so that's really a nice feature. You can use double slash comments, which again are comments to the end of the line if you haven't seen that before, very much like semicolons in Scheme. Variable length non-global arrays. In the early days of C, or even the KNR version 2, you had to have a constant in an array. You cannot have a variable in there in the original version 2 of Scheme. The ANSI C, I keep saying Scheme, ANSI C, you can't have a variable in the square brackets. You can in C99, and that's great. We love that, and we'll even know why that is when we start to look at MIPS and actually how C is implemented. It's really cool. This course will teach you so much of kind of ripping apart, ripping open the hood and looking underneath it. You'll understand why that is when we get to talking about where memory is stored. It's kind of cool. Int types give you explicit integer types. Unlike, I believe, Lab 1, which had longs and ints and long longs and all that stuff, if you use C99, you have uint, which I showed before, this other line here. You have uint and int n, where n is 8, 16, 64, 32, etc. So that's really cool, and explicitly tells you exactly how wide some variable is. Before this, you'd had ints were 16 or 32, depending on what system you had. That's crazy. How can you have a language in which the size actually matters? Because, you know, C is like poking at actual bits. But you have code that's not portable between systems because ints a different size? It's ridiculous. So with int types, you have code that is much more portable because you're declaring exactly how wide things should be. And standard bool allows for trues and falses, where there weren't before. We allow for that in NCC. In C99, thanks to C99, we have that where we didn't have that in NCC. All right, so again, you're not going to learn C from this, just these slides. You need to do the reading. You need to practice things. You need to work very, very soon on homework 2. Homework 1 is, you know, number representation. Homework 2 is, bam, start on this fun C program to make this really pretty picture, which is kind of a fractally looking thing. It's really awesome. So start now. Is it out yet? Is it out yet? It's going to be out soon. Okay, one is out now. So just to give you some sense of where we are, one is out now, do Friday, because it's really easy. So get there. Two is out on Wednesday, do next Wednesday. So we're basically doing everything with Wednesdays in general, right? Every Wednesday, bam, 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 bam. And we're doing a thing in which we never release more than one thing at one time, meaning we never have, in 6.1a, you actually have homeworks every week and then projects layered on top of that. We never do that to you. In fact, how about some clapping? How about some love here? Huh? That's what I'm talking about. This is what I'm talking about. We also never, if you have midterms, no exam. Sorry, midterms, you have no... midterm, no exam. You all got an A. Okay. No. I would love to have a non-graded course where we just do this for the fun of it rather than having to do this for your thing. I would love to do that, but we'll see when we get there. Midterms... I will never give you any project or homework due near a midterm because you should be studying for the midterm. So we're going to try to support you in that way. So basically, every week there's something due, either homework or project or a midterm. So homework 1 out Monday, due Friday. It should have been out last week, but fine because it's really short. Out Monday, due Friday. Okay. Homework 2, the C program, out Wednesday. So start reading so you're ready for this. Due next Wednesday. Okay. So everything is Wednesday, 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 Wednesday. Projects, what we do is we release them early, and we usually have them due late. So it's still every week. We have to keep that pace. But to have a project which is a little bit more code, we release it early and let it due late. So it kind of works out, but you need to kind of start these things early. So anybody, if you're in that category, start the homework to the moment it's out, literally, if you're new to C. Okay. Here are some references, KNR, as I mentioned, Java in a Nutshell. It's actually online, so please read that if you're interested in that. And Brian Harvey has great course notes in which he summarizes kind of C in the big picture in a 19-page document, and that's actually on the course website, 620 website. So, overview. C is a different language and a different way of taking source code and making a running program than both Scheme and Java. Both Scheme and Java are different from C. C, you compile it into an executable like Microsoft Word, and then you run it. That's how C works. Scheme, you have code that you interpret. Java, you have a compiling process and then an interpretive process. So all three are different in that kind of way, and you'll see why Java does what it does once you understand what this is. So C, that's a good thing, right? You compile it to machine code. It's really fast. It's optimized for its own system. How much better can you get? Well, except that my system, the executable, does not work on anything else. Not only does it not work on another type of processor, it also doesn't work with another operating system, right? You have different things. So, because you have libraries, LinkedIn, and all that stuff. So the problem is, you're architecture specific. You have to then move or port your code. Does it say here? I say then maybe the next slide. You have to port your code if you change it to move to another machine. That's really hard. Often it can be really hard depending on how difficult and how translatable those libraries are. C, there are actually three processes. C, say, oh, you mean you just compile and you run. Actually, no, there are three things in there that are done automatically for you when you run GCC. Compiling, assembling, and linking. It was conveniently called C, A, L. How hard is that to remember? Huh? Love that part. Just like Scheme. Scheme had cons, append, and list. Love this, right? You think folks who made computer science, where computer sciences didn't have a connection of who the top school in the country is. All right, good stuff. All right. What's the benefit of having this compiled-only language? Well, you get superior, almost unbeatable runtime performance. The only way to beat it is to actually hand code assembler or machine code, right? But trusting the compiler to the right thing is probably the right thing nowadays. You're probably not going to squeeze 50% of performance. In the olden days, they had terrible compilers, and you could actually write much, much more efficient code. Now, the compiler stuff is community is so good that hand editing it may not buy you much, certainly isn't worth the time for most applications. But you get crazy runtime performance, right? All the libraries that are used in the OS, all the things that you need performance, really, really, really need it, you have to go with something that compiles down and is not interpreted, right? The moment you say interpreted, you have a performance hit that often is a factor of 10 or even 20, depending on what your interpreter is. Compilation time is a factor, right? Interpreter code, just say go, and now your scheme interpreter just goes, and you're ready to run. But compiling means I make a change, I have to then compile it, which, depending on how big that is, remember, compiling really means compiling, assembling, and linking when we talk about that. That process could take an hour. In fact, people have started a company. We had a professor called John Osterhout, who was at Cal, went off to start his company, and his company was about using a cluster of mainframes to just parallelize the compiling process, called the build process for big software projects. Are you saying, Dave, come on, you compile, you say GCC, boom, I'm done in a second. What do you mean? Well, imagine if you were recompiling Windows 7 or some, what's the biggest piece of software you can imagine? Whatever it is, Maya version 12.73. Whatever you have, the biggest piece of software, imagine all that source code that goes into this monster piece of software and how long it would take to, say, recompile. And fortunately, we'll talk about there's some efficiencies where you only need to actually recompile the things that are changed and then just have to relink the whole thing. We'll talk about how to do that, how, why that's really fast. But the long story short is compiling time can be a big deal in the software development process. Disadvantages. So, as I mentioned before, change, compile, run really slow, right? It can be really slow. Porting we talked about, and again, you have this architecture specific tied to both the CPU and the operating system. People say, oh, it's just a CPU. No, no. If you have different operating systems, different libraries means the same executable does not work. So, for example, I can on this machine run Linux, Windows, and Mac OS, and I certainly can't just natively run a Windows program on my Mac without some kind of support from the OS to maybe help and do some translation. But by default, without any help from a smart OS, I can't just take a Windows executable and run it. Even though it's the same hardware, right? Obviously, just restart it in a new OS, I can't just rerun the same executable unless there's some special OS trick to help with that. We'll talk about virtualization at some point, I think, later. Maybe that would be a good thing to do near the end of the semester. Okay, so beginning first line you learn in first line in Java is public static, blah, 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 blah. Here, the first line is int main, int argc, char star argv, bracket, bracket. Very similar to what Java is, except for small, subtle things. Number one, main returns a number, and that's cool, because that means any C program can return to the OS running it, whether it succeeded or not. And you have one success and many different failures. So if you're going to return a number, and you were thinking about designing the space of numbers, what number maps, like an encoding, right? What number maps to success, and what numbers might map to failures, how would you map them so that it kind of have, you have one thing and a lot of other things, right? One of one kind, a lot of other kinds, one success, a lot of failures. Well, how would you map numbers to that in terms of the return value, what main should be? Zero, which is like a special number, might be what? Success, which is kind of weird, right? Zero is like off, so it feels like it should be failure, but no, zero is success in the return value from main, and failure is any one of the codes of a number which might map to different things. Pretty cool, right? The second thing that's different is I don't just have an array that knows about its size. In Java, I pass in an array, and I can ask an array what size it is. So it kind of carries it with it, like in an object model, and an object knows about itself. So an array knows how big it is, right? Even though it's not necessarily formally an object in the chain of that. Here, in C, which is again precedes Java, it does not have any idea what size that array is. All I know is that is an array of char stars, which we'll see in a second is called strings. So it's an array of strings. It's all the command line arguments. But I have no idea, given just this, how big it is. Thus, annoyingly, and this is what they learned in Java to fix, I have to pass in the argc also, and the argc tells me the size of that. Okay? The cool thing is, this is argc 0, or the sort, the first, the actual name of the executable, and my file and the argument is argc of 1. So this would say argc is 2 here. Why is that useful? Why is it useful? Why don't I just start here, right, at zero? Why do I start back there at zero? Ooh, nobody knows. Say it again. The name of the program. Why would that ever be useful for the source code to know that? That's right. It's the name of the program, and that source code now knows that. But why would it care? If you're writing a virus. No, give me a good reason. Come on. Virus schmires. Come on, give me some real stuff. You want to stay with it? You have another idea? Any ideas? Why would you ever? Yeah, sure. What's busy box?
One binary.
I don't know what that means. Okay.
By the same, called by different men and program names.
Oh, I see. So you could kind of wrap them all, and then you'd know whether you were the conglomerate or whether you were the small guy, I'm guessing from that. That's true. Give me a really easy one. What happens when you get an error? When let's say sort takes only one argument. I give sort five arguments. Yeah.
You can return, which program.
Not return, but I could. I return a non-zero number, right? We learned that a second ago. And I would print out a usage string, which says, yeah, what program I am, just to kind of help the usage string. That would be nice, right? So that's one argument. There's a lot of other applications, but it's kind of cool that you can have it if you need to have it, OK? Good stuff. By the way, any questions, feel free. I want to have a much more engaging, interactive thing, so let's stay with that. OK, so variable declarations. Yes, sorry, yeah, please. No, go back. Go ahead, try it.
But you know, task manager has a process list. Do you have anything to do with that too?
That's interesting. The task manager has a process list. Well, when you make a process, you're setting stuff up with the OS. Like you make an agreement, give me a new process ID, blah, blah, blah. That's when the handshake happens. I don't think the task manager needs to know that kind of stuff. But it's relevant in the sense it's useful to see what the process ID's name are. But that's kind of more at the OS side. In the olden days of C, what you had to do with this is, again, annoying that they fixed in C89, used to have all your variables you're ever going to use are at the top. Variable, 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 variable. And then you start the code, which is so annoying because you're down deep in the middle of code and you want to like add another variable. You have to go back to the top, which could be, if you write poor code, could be this long, you know, function. And you go back to the top, add the variable, and go back here and start using it. And this is this disconnected kind of annoying thing. So now C99 overcomes that. You can just put it when you need it, at least in the for block. In general, you still put your variables up top, but at least in a for block, you can use guy off the fly right there. Here's this, by the way, this bullet is maybe the most important bullet of the whole lecture, which is when you make a new variable, unlike Java, it holds garbage. Okay? So Scheme doesn't have any types. Okay? Scheme doesn't have the worry where you have to declare the type. Scheme is an untyped language. C and Java are very strongly typed languages. Java is stronger than C. C, you can do all these kind of things. So Java is very much more strongly typed than C is, because you can mutate types. We'll talk about that, how to do casting later. But you're declaring int A, which is kind of a line that doesn't do anything. It just declares stuff to the compiler to be able to allow it to know how big the size is to do some optimization. So if I just say int A and don't have any assignment, A holds garbage. And that's true for any A, you know, any int blah. File type, variable, semicolon, that always holds garbage. Garbage means some random number. You don't know what it is. It's going to change intermittently. If you print it out, people say, you know, why does this code seem to operate randomly? Like, what do you mean? Well, every time I run it, it's a different value. Well, that's exactly a case where that would happen. Normally, computers are predictable and deterministic. But that's the first case where not intentionally, not by calling random, but not intentionally, you're getting non-determinism, right? Printf A, if I just have int A, is going to give you a random value, whatever happened to be in that memory spot beforehand. That's the first time you might get that, okay? So now we're getting, so any questions on just kind of declaring stuff and why you need to do that and how to, yes, right in the middle. Say it again. Aren't all external variables have a default? I believe externals are also garbage when you initialize them. I don't see what value. There's no default value defined at the C standard. It's not like, well, integers are zero. So anything you've made it external would not have a default value. Do you have a comment on that?
Are we supposed to be coding using C99?
I would encourage you to code in C99. All ANSI C works with C99. It's a superset. So if you want to stay in ANSI, fine by us, but you're going to have a much better time, much more fun to code in C99. Yeah, okay. And we'll actually ask you questions on the exam about C99. So you kind of want to get, you know, using the language we're going to be asking you questions about. All right. So, question. Yes, another question.
Did you use the slide for the for loop?
Yes. It's incorrect without the star here, without C99.
Oh.
With, it is correct, but without, it is. That's the kind of star here. These two things are starred. Okay, no problem. Good questions. All right, address versus value. So I would say the hardest thing, if you're going to ask me, Dan, give me the one-minute short summary on anyone migrating from Scheme directly to this course to see what's the hardest thing to grok, to understand. The hardest thing is easily pointers, addresses, arrays, right? Maybe arrays on the easy side of that, but pointers and dereferencing is easily the hardest part of this whole thing. So let's start on the easy side. Just understand, make sure we understand what addresses versus values are. An array is just basically a large column of numbers. And those numbers can be encoded as anything. Those can be floats or ints or structures, but just a large column of things. Each column, or here it's a large row, each element has an address, is addressable. That's how you can get to it. You normally don't ever worry about that. In Scheme, you never had to know what the address of anything is. In C, for the most part, you don't, except when you want to play with some pointery stuff. In this case, you do. You don't ever actually need to know that this happened to be 104. If you're actually smart about it, you never need to see or type or know about the number 104, meaning that could be 204 the next time you run it. It should still work. But you do need to know that it lives at some place, and you need to have a reference to it. So, don't confuse the address here in red with the value. The value here is 23 and 42. You're going to ask, well, what happens if one of these values contains 104? Doesn't that contain both a value and address? The answer is yes. And that's how we're going to do some fun things. Okay? Addresses and values are different. Addresses like the address of your house, and the contents of your house is you and your HDTV and all that stuff. Okay. So a pointer is what we call one of those boxes that contains an address. So if a box contains 104, we can consider that a pointer. Okay? Simple. You can type in x equals 104 and say, like, that's not a pointer, except if you declare it as a pointer, you give it 104, then you can actually do something with that. So you have to kind of tell C, the compiler, that I'm declaring this as a pointer, and if it ever happens to get 104, you can actually go and poke at what 104 points to. We'll show that in a slide right here. Okay? So for example, I have x. X is the name of a variable. Its location is 104. Its contents, its value is 23. I have y. Similar, y has another address, has another value. I have another pointer. I've declared this in the declaration. Remember, it's typed. I have to declare this to compiler. I've declared it as a pointer. I'll show you how to do that in a slide or two. This is now going to point to that value x. So that means the contents, the value of this, will be exactly the address of x. That makes sense? The value of P, the guy in the box, is the address, the top guy, of X. Okay? Okay. That's called P points to X. And I would then draw this, if I'm teaching myself and doing a tutorial, which I'm sure they'll do at the tutorial session, they'll draw this arrow. We'll draw these pointer diagrams. It's not like, not 100% like the box and pointer, but in fact, if you remember the box and pointer diagram 61A, in fact, that's actually what was happening down deep. There was an address pointed to in the structure that was doing the representation of the console. So same kind of thing. Yes, question.
Does that pointer update?
This pointer, does it update? What do you mean by that?
If x moves,
x doesn't move.
Okay.
If x changes, like the 23 becomes 25, pointer doesn't need to change because it still points to where x lived. X is not going to be moving around. Because when I declare it, I say int x. And then the computer says, oh, I need a space for what x is. Int, x is an int. I know how wide it should be. And thus, I will place it there and then store some stuff there. But it's never going to, and there's no C code to say move that around. Okay. So how to create a pointer? Okay. Well, address, this little operator, this is the first time I'm teaching a new C here. This address operator says get the address of the variable. In a way, it's like look up in my address book. So here are two lines. Int star p and int x. That declares two variables, two boxes. What do they contain? Garbage. Love it, right? We don't know what they are. But I do know the system knows that this is eventually going to be a pointer because I've said it's going to be a pointer, and this is not going to be a pointer. Okay, so x is going to be a normal integer, and p is going to be a pointer to an integer. This is crucial. The system also needs to know what are you pointing to. So this is not just a pointer. It's not enough to say that. You just say it's a pointer to an integer. That's important also. Okay. So then, x equals 3. Standard idea, this box, x is 3. X has some address. I don't know what it is here. P has some address. I don't know what it is here. Right? P also lives someplace. I don't know what that is. Nor do I care about it. How do I get P to connect to X? Well, you just told me this guy. So how about P equals address of X, read as literally that phrase, P equals address of X. That's how you read it. And P then points to X. What is the address of X? I don't know. Do I care? No. That's beautiful, folks. That's really beautiful that I actually don't care what X happens to live. This code is going to run wherever, it's going to work wherever X happens to be. That's really great. Question in the side. No. You just said, is there anything more than just that address? All this did was, in some record, basically the compiler is really smart. And the compiler is going to know that if you decide to play with it later on. But all this does, all that line does, it doesn't update any other records other than say, that is going to get 104, or wherever X happened to be. That's all that changes with that one line. It's not like a lot of tables get changed, just that one thing. But later on, you'll see that the compiler might be smart, and it might need to know that to generate an error or something like that if that comes up, okay, if you try to do the wrong thing. All right. And that'll be, by the way, caught at the compile stage, not at the runtime stage. That's really important. The compiler will look at it and say, wait, you told me that's a pointer to this, but you're just setting, like if I just have int x and int y, and x equals address of y, or y equals address of x, you say, wait, y, you said it was going to be an integer, but it's really... You're treating it in the code as if it's a pointer, right? If I say y equals address of x, if I say this, I'll start here. What if I take the star away? If I take the star away, the compiler can say, this is not really what you told me by here. You said p and x are just numbers. But right here, you're treating it as if p is a special guy. So the compiler is going to give that an error, and people who are big fans of strongly typed languages believe that that makes you a better programmer. Because you won't catch that at runtime. If you didn't tell me that and just all of a sudden run it as if that's what you want, but in fact it's a buggy thing. You're treating it as a number. You're thinking of it in your mind as a number, but in your code you're saying it as a pointer. Then that's gonna probably be an error for later on. The compiler is gonna then catch you and say, you know, you're kind of telling me not inconsistent stuff. So it kind of makes you be more rigorous with that. So people who are big fans of Java say that solves half the problem. We often talk in CS621A and CS3 about a lot of the bugs in code are domain and range mismatches. Do you remember that days of domain and range where this guy returns a word, but it's passing to this guy who's expecting a sentence or vice versa? And you end up having this guy, you know, it just doesn't plug in right. Now, it happens that sentences are large enough that you can treat words well. It wasn't a good example, but that's the idea, right? You're having these things which might be one type be received or passed into an argument of another type. If you have a strongly typed language, that'll be caught at compile time rather than years later after you have production code and that code didn't get tested and it fails and shuttled and makes a left turn. Right, not so good. Okay. Question? Again, the point of saying not just having a new type called pointer is that you can know how big things are. So if I try to stuff something too big or too small into that box, it can complain. That's the idea. The compiler can warn me that, hey, you're stuffing a big number into this small box. It's a pointer to this int, and it's only 4 bytes wide, and you're stuffing some number that's much bigger than that or whatever, some smaller than that kind of thing. If I had a character, and I try to say, this 1-byte character, follow p and stuff it into x, this expects 4 bytes of data. This character is only 1 byte. That could be a problem. So the compiler would then warn you. Yes? You can cast things and do strange things, and there's implicit understandings of what you do with that. How do you stretch something or do something? But in general, it'll warn you at the very least if you're trying to stuff a small guy into a big guy. Big guy into a small guy is an error. Kind of like Java, right? Java does the right thing in terms of one way, not the other. Similar kind of thing. Okay, how do I get the value pointed to? How do I actually, so that's a way to connect it, but how do I ever use P in a useful way? Well, I use this star guy to dereference P. So printf, open paren quotes, P points to some number. Percent %d is the way you specify numbers. Signed numbers, very important. \n, ever quote, comma, star p. That says, follow P to whatever P points to and treat that as the guy that should be right there. So this is exactly 1,000 times the same as, like somehow that means makes sense to have something be the same as 1,000 times, putting X here. Does this make sense? Star P exactly triple equals X in that same place. Question there in the middle.
Can you reassign that pointer after you've already declared it?
I can. The question is, can you reassign P? And the answer is yes. Later, the next line I can say P equals address of Y and have that be pointing to something else and poke there. Instead, I can have P poke to all of you and say, P poked to student one, all right, take their money out and put it in my account. Poked another student, keep doing that. Is that a good program I should write? That kind of thing. So yes, you can do that. Now, there's a little aside here, which is note that the star symbol gets used two different ways in this slide. Up here, it's in the declaration, telling compiler, this guy is going to be a pointer. Down here, it's actually an action that says, follow or dereference P to get the value that P points to. Does that make sense? Okay, yes, question.
Let's say we wanted to find out the value of address of X.
Okay.
And we did it in the not smart way of declaring another variable, pointer Q, let's say.
What? You were saying you want to find out the address of X. P's got it.
Yes.
Just print P. You can just print P. That'll be it. That's address. It's kind of cool. In fact, I encourage you starting right now, like chemistry, I wouldn't say this. I'd say, starting right now, go off and start playing with chemicals and mixing them in crazy ways. No, I'm in computer science. I can say that, right? It's kind of a cool field that I can say that. Go crazy, starting to write some code, maybe four lines, and you can actually reveal, like, oh my gosh, this is the actual address. It's telling me where it actually lives. That is so cool. Scheme never told me that. I couldn't ever get that from Scheme. I can get it from C. So right here, int x, you just say printf address of x, one, two lines. Now, this is a signed thing, and remember, is memory signed or unsigned? Does it make sense to have negative addresses? Not so much. So you probably want to print this unsigned than signed, but still, that's kind of cool. Yes, your question, did I answer, or not so much? Okay, good. I knew where you were going, by the way. Good. So, how do you change a variable pointed to? That was one of the questions that came up. So use the star on the left. So for example, how do I then, that's how star P is on the right, that's how you get that value, but how you smush a value in, how you overwrite that 3 or clobber that 3 is put star P on the left-hand side. This, by the way, is triple equals the same as putting X equals 5. This is X. Star P equals 5, bam. X is now changed. Isn't that kind of cool? That's the reason we use pointers, because I can read and write them. If I could only read them, that's half the battle. I have to be able to write them too, and now I can use them just like I did variables. Okay? What's cool is you can imagine a big database, a huge database, big one. And I have a subroutine, which is going to say average all the salaries of this big database of all UC employees, say. Would I pass all of this? Let me lift it. Hold on. Maggie. Here's 20 terabytes of data. Or would I just pass one pointer? Bling! Now they have a pointer and then can reference back and then poke all around and query and change and do all the right things. It's kind of cool. So that's why we use pointers. Because you don't want to pass them as an argument, you just pass a pointer. That's exactly how that's done. That's the right way to do it. It's one level of indirection if you think about that. Right? Question there. You've been asked one, yes.
So if you can use pointers exactly like you can use variables, why do we even use variables?
Good question. Well, pointers are variables. The question was, why do you use pointers if we can just, why do you use variables if you use pointers? It makes code is much easier to read to use variables, right? Plus, if you say int star p, and then the next line is star p equals 5, what happens? I mean, where does that red arrow go if you don't have an actual variable to start with, right? Yeah. So you kind of go into some garbage location memory, which we probably don't control, and stuffing some data in there, and that could be a problem, right? So you kind of have to have variables at least. And also, P is a variable too, right? Don't think P is a different guy. It just happens to be told to the type, to the compiler, that it's a different guy. Yes, question?
Can you chain pointers?
Can I chain them? Yes, indeed. I can have a pointer to a pointer. In fact, you'll see that next slide, maybe two lectures from now, you'll have star star, which means it's a pointer to a pointer to an int. It's kind of cool. Isn't that neat? Look in the C definition to see how far you can go. It's actually quite cool. All right, question about this. It's pretty easy, right, so far? But maybe mind-blowing if you've never done this before. So maybe really new for folks. All right, we're almost at the end, by the way. We're doing well with time, I think. Okay. Yes, actually, we're doing well. So Java and C are passed by value. People always get this wrong. This is like you walk into Google for your big, huge interview for all the free food. Like behind those gates, the pearly gates of whatever job you want is free food and money and wealth and family and, right? 20% off a week, all those things are beyond the golden arches, okay? The golden G, I guess. So the catch is, they ask you a question, which is, hey, so Java and C, they're passed by value, passed by reference. And you say, passed by reference, right? Because you're passing a reference to it, and they say, sorry, next. That's what happens, right? You have to know this, that it's passed by value. Okay, this is a really important piece of it. You probably knew this in 61A, but you need to really know this in 61C, okay? Passed by value, a copy is sent. And we're going to see exactly why that is when we get to MIPS. It's really quite cool. At some point, I'm going to revisit the slide and say, hey, that's why it's passed by value. It's kind of quite cool. It's kind of neat when that happens. See, like, it's like revealing layers of the onion exactly one layer at a time. You're going to know it after 61C. You kind of thought you knew it, but you actually know it after this course. So here's a void. Void says don't do any, don't return any value, add one. Takes a value x, x equals x plus 1. Here's int y. It's set to 3. I call add 1. What do you think? Before I've shown it. You know the answer. Why is that the case? I'll say, there's too many whys. Por qué is that the case? Okay? A little international flavor here. Yes? Oh, I see. So interesting. So this is actually interesting that you said that. This is kind of saying a definition for it. And so that's not being used yet. Then it goes to here, and then it's calling this guy, which is doing what? The why. Is y going in here, or somehow the value of y, exactly where are we going to go with that? The value of y gets copied to x. X is a different variable than y. They both happen to share 3. They both happen to share the same value, but they are not at all connected. This local x gets a value 3, gets changed to 4. By the time add 1 is done, nothing has changed to y. That's a really important thing to know. You probably knew this from 621A. If I had given this to you, I'd hope you'd know that would still y is still 3 in 621A. But maybe you didn't know that so much because you don't kind of do set bang or set q that often. But anyway, it's 3. How do we make it 4? We want to make it 4, right? It's clear the program was trying to make y 4. What can we do? Pointers! That's how it works. So, here we go. The function changes the value by simply doing the following. Add 1 takes in a pointer, not a value. Takes in a pointer to an integer, not an integer. It's still getting the value. You say, but Dan, if it's not passed by reference, how does even this work? What was x called with here? What's the value of x? Like right before this line, what's x? 3. 3, right? X is just 3, okay? Here we go. Ready? Stay with this. What does P have? What's the value of P? Address of Y, which is maybe like 104. So P still gets a value 104, still starts here and ends up there, and P has 104, but because you have 104 and not 3, you can do things with it like we did before, like poke it and change it. So star P, that's 3, plus 1. This is like replacing this with saying y equals y plus 1 in some kind of sense, right? Think about it semantically, right? So this is 3 plus 1 is 4. Now stuff 4 into whatever P points to. So go to 104, follow the red arrow, and stuff a 4 in there. And when you come back out, y is 4. Isn't that cool? That is really powerful, and you couldn't do this in 61A without set car and set cutter, which is a kind of weird thing. But you cannot do it just set bang. Set bang does not allow you to do that in 621A. But set car, because you're kind of poking in and doing that. So you can't with a set car, but you cannot do it with a set bang. Okay? But you can with pointers. It's powerful stuff, all right? Questions? This is the big thing you learned today, by the way. what pointers are in this example, and like how it didn't work in the previous slide, how it does work now. Question.
From the slide before, could we have just used address of x instead of x?
Could I have used, oh, that's interesting. Could I have used address of x here? Here? Address of x. Tell me what you want this line to say. Address of x equals address of x plus 1. Well, great question. X and y are two different variables. So y was over here at 104, waiting to be changed. La 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 la, please change me. X is over here, and you're saying address of x equals, I mean, it's all about a different variable. You're not going to get to it, right? So it doesn't work. No way to make this work unless you pass in the address. If you only pass in 3, there's no way to get, what I'm saying is if the 3 goes in and 3 alone, 104 never goes in, you never know how to get to y anymore. So it doesn't work. Anything you try is not going to work within add 1. Question, yes? Oops, did I show the answer? I hope I didn't. Sometimes I go too fast. Sorry. Go.
So in star p, that means that like whatever it gets is supposed to be an address or a point.
Correct. Whatever p gets better be an address. But p doesn't know. P gets a 104. P gets sent a 104. The compiler sees the whole picture and sees this line and sees that and looks up what it thinks all the variables were and checks it and gives you an error or warning depending if you're not doing the right thing. But there's no difference in terms of what happened. This before it was 3 goes from here to here, and now 104 goes from there to there. In the sense of like what got transmitted, it was still a value of whatever it was.
But if you don't dereference it, you still have to dereference.
Yes, great. If you say p equals p plus 1, very different thing. That's going to 104, making 104 be 105 or 108 or something like that, right? And that's not going to change the y, right? Okay, good. All right. Pointers can point to anything. You type them. You have void star for a generic pointer, which is used very sparingly, and we'll talk about that maybe some more. Question. Good. I want to have time for the question. This is the last slide. So look at this. Think about it. I will get the thing launched. Actually, I have to launch it here, but let me go launch it quickly and get this. Start looking at it while I'm launching this. Here we go. It's over here. There, I'll do that. Sorry for not launching this before. Okay. How many syntax plus logic errors in this code? All right. Okay. So go back to here. Run it. We'll have enough time for this. Okay, how many errors? 1 through 5, A through E. Okay, so think about it. I'll just start now, and if you're ready to start voting, you'll start voting. And go. So it's A through E is 1 through 5. Maybe I should move this over a little bit. There. Okay. So take a look. In some sense, I can help you walk this through. And you can talk to your neighbor if you want. This we only have time for one, unfortunately. I want to, by the way, support questions as much as possible, right? To be able to support you. But often they do eat into slides and time to do this discussion thing. So we got to always kind of pinch them sometimes. So I want to basically say, is a pointer, is an X and a Y. Y is supposed to be something interesting over here. And then a Z there. And I flip the sign of P, which is supposed to make it negative. If it was positive, make it negative. Negative, make it positive. And to print out X, Y, and P. That's all it is. Okay? So, how many? By the way, you're supposed to be voting now. Hopefully, you're voting. 165. Just give me a number. You know, you're never hurt by having a wrong answer. I never will take points away from you. I only care that you vote. I don't care, in some sense, what you vote. I want you to reveal your true feelings of things, though. The purpose of these voting is for me to see if you're confused, and we stop lecture and we answer your questions. So it's not about grading you right now. All right, 220, we're doing well. Can we get any higher? Okay, just for fun, 230, well, you're doing well. Don't change it when I show you the answers, okay? Keep it up there. Interesting. So basically, a lot in the middle, and then kind of a little bell curvy thing in there. Stop changing. Okay. Stop. All right, good stuff. And hide the picture. So basically, it was 1 through 5, mostly in the 3, softly in 2 and 4, and softly in 1 and 5. Actually, I got 5. I love when I kind of trick you up. If it's too obvious, it's a bad question. Let's count them. Main is not an int. Main is an int, not a void. See, this slide said void. Main's an int. In Java, it's a void. So that's an error. You can't put a semicolon there. That's not so cool. You're missing a semicolon here. This thing was trying to print signed. This is a signed number. If that happens to be in the high side of it, it'll be a negative number when you print out. Not so cool for an address. And this is not allowed. You can do underscore, but that's looking up and saying, well, that's flip minus a call to sine of p. So you can't do that. Okay? Five errors. Just make sure they're small. Let me get you at the end. I think we're out of time. So in summary, declarations go at the beginning, although with C99 you can put them in front of for loops. I didn't show this slide. There are, I believe, some reference slides still part of this. So zero and none are false. Data is all in memory. Memory is location. Each location has an address. Pointers have star for following the pointer and address for getting where it is. All right? We'll see you guys on Wednesday. Start homework one right now.